Some stations on shortwave sound like they've been around since the dinosaur era, presenting stories the way they did in the 160s, 70s, and 80,000 years ago. Snap out of your Mesozoic mood and switch to Radio Netherlands, contemporary continental radio from the heart of Northwest Europe.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
This is Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service. Marks on Mechanics. Jonathan Marks investigates objects mechanical. In this third episode, the focus is on pianolas.
Not a bad recording for 1911. In fact, in the next half hour, we'll show you that digital recording really started long before the compact disc, and piano rolls are the key to discovering what some composers really wanted to be performed. Often incomplete records show that mechanical birds and automatic flute players amused royalty as early as the 1500s. But ordinary citizens had little chance of hearing such a performance, let alone owning such a machine. By the early 1800s, the Swiss, long famous for watches, were producing musical boxes, which played melodies on a tuned steel comb. The music was arranged on a brass cylinder by means of pins which stuck out and plucked the comb. Around 1880, mass production of musical boxes accounted for a sizable percentage of Switzerland's exports. But there was a problem. Even though ingenious systems were devised to shift the cylinder sideways and thus bring another series of pins in line to play a different repertoire, the choice of melodies was still limited. The Germans decided to switch the cylinder for a removable disc, and within 10 years they'd captured the European market away from the Swiss. The late 19th century also saw the development of organs, some large for performances at fairs, others much smaller for use in the home. In the United States, reed organs were made by the hundreds of thousands. Instead of a disc, the tune was recorded on a roll of paper in the form of a series of holes. Most of the songs made for the reed organ were religious, and the rolls were cheap, 75 cents each. But the late 19th century was also the period when developments were taking place on both sides of the Atlantic to try and automate the piano. In 1863, the Frenchman Fourneau patented a pneumatically operated player piano called the Pianista. The invention was soon adapted by others, first as a separate device designed to be pushed up against an ordinary piano. Dutch collector Jo Jongen explains that the credit for the name pianola goes to a company who made a 65-finger device in 1902, which you pumped with your feet.
Pianola is a trade name. One of the biggest companies in America was the Aeolian Company. Aeolus, that's the god of the wind. So Aeolian, because we make the instrument playing with air,
I see. It was a copyright name. What about the names given in Europe? Did they call it something else?
Every company has its own trademark. Hoopveld has the Phonolist. That was the trade name of the German Hoopveld company.
Most of the advertisements by Aeolian in America and Hoopveld in Germany show an elegant woman in front of the push-up. But you can't see her feet pedalling away. These devices are now collector's items.
Yeah, we have a club in Holland, and we have about 300 members. Not only Dutch people, we have, 20 people in Belgium and also in Germany. In Germany, there's also a big club.
What's the fascination? Is it also restoring the instruments as well?
I think you can divide our club in several persons. There are persons who like the history of the musicians of that time. There are people who have more the technical aspects of whose instruments.
And sometimes you find people who have an interest in both. Rein Groos lives in the historic centre of Haarlem on the Dutch North Sea coast. His house is full of instruments that tell the story of automated piano playing. And like most collectors, Rein aims to get them working again.
Okay, so is this the oldest?
That's the oldest. It's a very old push-up, but it was built about 1899.
So the idea is that you bought an ordinary piano,
mm-hmm.
and you push this thing against it?
Against it. This one has only 65 fingers.
65 fingers?
65 fingers.
So the other...
But I've only 10, you know.
So you pushed up against the piano, mm-hmm. you put the roll in, and you pedalled.
Pedalling, pumping.
I see, so there's no pianissimo?
No pianissimo, no fortissimo, no left or right pedal.
And what about speed? The faster you pedal, the faster it goes?
No.
There is a regulator.
There's a regulator.
Okay, so put the roll in. The roll's made of paper?
Paper.
Thread it through. All right. You're pushing. You've got to push the pedals.
And now it's rolling back.
Right. Rewinding it now.
The pianola was advertised for sale at $250 US. But the performance of the early push-ups was crude. There was no difference in expression between the left and right hand, and it sounded very mechanical. As the 20th century dawned, the company of Michael Welter was important in the world of automated musical instruments, nestled in the hills of the Black Forest of Germany. In 1904, Welter perfected a system which not only registered the notes, but also the expression. He invited famous composers and performers of the day to record music for him. Gustav Mahler accepted the invitation for a considerable fee, and on the afternoon of November 9th, 1905, recorded four rolls, including the fourth movement of Symphony No. 4. It reveals that Mahler played his own music at a much faster pace than we normally hear it, and these rolls provide a unique opportunity to hear the composer's interpretation.
Now, we're standing in front of a very different-looking piece of apparatus now, because it doesn't have a keyboard.
It doesn't have a keyboard. Did a keyboard as it had well. There was an advertisement. Absolutely not sold at cafes and dancing and so on.
I see. So, in other words, they wanted to keep it very elite. But this is German.
This German, in Freiburg.
And how old is it?
It was built in 1908, and it was ordered by Eton College in England.
The keyboardless Red Velter was later sold to the daughter of the writer Anthony Trollope. When she passed away, the piano was stored in a barn in the New Forest, southern England, before being rediscovered by Rein Gross about 10 years ago. It was ruined then, today it's back to its original splendour. Mahler was soon joined by others who played for the Velter Company, Sanson, Strauss and Grieg, as well as many famous pianists such as Rachmaninoff and Rubinstein. By 1914, the Velter catalogue had 2,500 titles, and the Velter system had rivals, the Ampico mechanism from the American Piano Company and the Duo Art from New York's Aeolian Corporation. So-called reproducing pianos were about twice the price of the foot-pumped home-player pianos, so expression had its price.
You can correct the holes. When it is not very well played, you can tape over the holes and push in some new ones.
So, in other words, if your performance wasn't exactly perfect, you could
mostly
edit it.
Mostly better than he played it.
It also made it possible to actually play impossible things, didn't it? I mean, whether...
that's impossible. Is possible to play impossible things.
Really?
I've only 10 fingers, but here there are 88 fingers. There are some composers who composed especially for the pianola. Stravinsky did it, and Arnold Bex in England, and Percy Grainger.
So these are all works which could never be performed again.
Never be performed again.
I see.
I have the score here of the Shepherd's Hay. And it is impossible for pianists to play all this in one time.
I see.
But it is in the row.
It is in the row.
It is in the row.
Shepherd's Hay, the impossible piece transcribed from the score to piano roll. But Grainger also recorded playable pieces, which have been discovered by collectors.
It plays exactly what the pianist played in the roll. And this is Percy Grainger again, who's playing the first part of a piano concerto by Edward Grieg. Edward Grieg was a big friend of him, of his, and, well, he played it better than Grieg could play, said Grieg. You play it better than I can, so you do it. And this is only the piano part
right.
of the concerto. Also not the orchestral part. It is possible to play this with an orchestra. But most conductors are very afraid of it. Seeing a piano and no, nobody working on it.
And of course they can't control it if they want to slow it down.
They can't control it. Well, I switch it on, now you hear a little noise, but...
Right.
There's the electric pump. So, I do nothing. I'm staying.
Right, that's a vacuum pump, is it?
It's a vacuum pump.
And at this point, the orchestra comes in. It's curious that this air-driven technology is capable of repeating notes, like trills, much better than any modern magnetically driven system. So what's Rein Kroes' secret to restoring these special pianos?
First is it has to be absolutely airtight. Because you are pumping the air out of the system, and when there's a leak, it doesn't work. So the only thing you have to do is to use the right materials and have the exact knowledge of what you are doing.
What made you get interested in this? I mean, was it couldn't you play the piano?
No, not even a note. I played the violin.
Right, I see.
And I want the piano to have someone to accompany me. And the first piano I bought was a very good piano, but there was something in it I didn't know what it was. I didn't even know what it was. Springs and well...
You wanted to take it out?
I would take it out, but an old man living next door said, don't do that, there's a pianola. I said, what is that? It's a pianola. And you can put the roll in it and make a pump.
Thank you. In Utrecht, the National Museum, from musical clock to street organ, has recently improved its collection of automated pianos. Fred Bernau is a young Dutchman who's built a workshop to restore such instruments in the south of the Netherlands. Remember, there's a tremendous tension in the piano frame holding the strings, so restoration requires patience and precision.
De pneumatiek die is zodanig in elkaar gebouwd van dit instrument dat het dus niet uit elkaar te halen is.
The pneumatic section of the instrument has been constructed in such a way that in order to overhaul it, you have to break it up. Instead of using screws, the manufacturer simply glued the frames together. And you find two distinct parts of the instrument, the piano part and a mechanical player part, two completely different worlds. In fact, there were people specialized in just repairing the pneumatic mechanism, and those who simply tuned the piano. That added to the cost of things. Around the early 1920s, you could pay about $3,000 for one of these instruments. That's enough in those days to buy two houses.
Restoration of a standard pianola costs about $5,000 at today's prices. Bernau actually holds regular workshops to pass on his skills and show hobbyists how to do the restoration job properly.
Components are usually made of wood or metal, and the manufacturers have long since gone. So you have to make faithful copies here in the workshop. I've been fortunate that I've worked with so many instruments in the last 10 years, I know how most of them work. And there are reference books which have exploded views of the insides. Just as with any antiques, most owners want the repairs to be faithful copies of the originals. However, there are cases where that's not advisable. Some manufacturers used to use switches with mercury in them, and this was exposed to the air. Today we know mercury fumes are highly poisonous, so I replace these switches with modern relays.
Unlike a fairground organ, pushing the pedals with your feet on a pianola pumps air out of the instrument. It should only get back in again through the tracker bar, a roll of 88 holes, each corresponding to one note on the piano. The paper roll with holes in it, gliding over this tracker bar, determines which note is actually played. Many instruments that turn up at auction today have been ruined by woodworm or have simply been stored in a very damp place. But modern houses can create problems too, for the opposite reasons. The newly restored pianola goes from one extreme to another.
Yes, that's a big problem for us as hobbyists nowadays. So in winter, we have mostly big problems with our instruments.
What happens? They dry out?
They have a dry out, yes. You have to look on your meters every day how it is the weather outside and inside your home.
So you have a pianola, a humidifier. Now what about the piano rolls?
In America there is a small company, I think there are 8 persons. They make modern music. Nowadays you can buy there every kind of music, also modern music and jazz.
Although there's an active group of pianola enthusiasts in the Netherlands, most of the musical repertoire seems to be English, American or German.
You have to consider that the Dutch market is very small. So we have some Santa Claus and Christmas songs, especially made by German manufacturers for the Dutch market. There was one Dutch manufacturer of pianolas. It was settled in Tilburg, the firm of Kessels. And we had also 3 manufacturers of pianola rolls, the Hollandia, Euterpe AMF, the first Dutch piano roll company.
What about keeping the rolls? They must be, I should think, pretty fragile, bearing in mind that, okay, you've got an instrument, you have to be careful with the instrument about the humidity problems. What about the rolls themselves? Because they're made of paper.
Yeah, I think the most important thing for rolls is to keep them dry. What you can see nowadays, that the manufacturers in former days say not all of them use the same quality of paper.
The arrival of the radio and the gramophone spelled the end of the player-piano era, not to mention alcohol prohibition in the United States, which removed the need for entertainment in the bars. And when the Depression of the 1930s arrived, famous pianola companies went bankrupt, putting thousands of unemployed on the streets. But will the pianolas that were made at the start of this century still be playing 100 or maybe 200 years from now?
I hope that there will be, in the future, hobbyists like we are to keep them rolling. We say for motor cars, but we keep them rolling by the roll.
What about bringing younger people in, though?
Yeah, we are. Within our club, we have many younger people. We give them some lessons to how to restore the instruments.
Fred Bernau has seen a lot of pianolas designed to play back the rolls. But what about the recording equipment used by the manufacturers? Does that ever turn up at auction?
That is zonder meer heel zeldzaam. Er zijn bepaalde fabrieken.
That's very rare. There are a few factories where the old recording equipment was saved after the industry went bankrupt in the late 30s and 40s. In England, there's a surviving example of the recording system for the Duo Art System. There's another system preserved in New York, I believe, but in Germany, how they made the piano roll recordings remains a mystery. On some of the manufacturer's brochures, you'll see a famous composer like Mahler playing his own composition, and in the background, a man with whiskers and a moustache in front of a cabinet. But no one knows what was inside it. You can only hear the result.
Met een kennis van mij ongeveer 10 jaar geleden begonnen.
About 10 years ago, a friend and I began a project to make new rolls. Initially, we wanted to be able to copy the rolls, some of which had marvellous songs on them, but had been kept in a damp place. They would only play a few more times before disintegrating. I built a machine to read the roll and punch out a new copy. And now, we can go one stage further. We can ask a pianist to play a composition on an electronic piano. The performance is stored digitally on a floppy disk, and I use the computer data to drive the punch to make new rolls. I think that people who marvel at the clarity of modern digital compact disc recordings forget that the piano roll is really the first time that music was recorded digitally, way back at the start of the century.
Just like stamp collecting, pianola collecting has its problems. one often isn't enough. So how many does Jo Jongen have?
Playing and not playing, eh? Playing two, and in total I have five. But three I have to work and to restore them.
So you're busy doing that yourself?
By myself, yes, and with the help of Fred.
And something that you have to put a lot of time into? I mean, it's not something you can do in a couple of days, is it?
No, I think you have to work for a piano player until 2 years.
And that's where we close the lid on the world of the pianola. My thanks to Rein Groos, Fred Barna, and Jo Jongen. And my apologies to Tchaikovsky.
Marks on Mechanics was produced and presented by Jonathan Marks for Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.